Hello, everyone. I'm Alex, and I'm here with my husband, Shane, and we are so glad that you could join us for Happy Hour on this Family Tree podcast, episode 201.
201. We're in it now.
We're in it now. And Shane, we're going to be in something else pretty soon.
I'm intrigued.
We're going to be in the Caribbean Ocean. Caribbean Sea? Is it an ocean or a sea?
Is it Caribbean? Or wait, what did I even say?
Caribbean.
Is it Caribbean or Caribbean?
I think it's Caribbean. I think that Americans say Caribbean, and then that's become kind of like the vernacular, but I think it's Caribbean.
And your question was, is it ocean or what?
Or sea. It's a Caribbean sea, right?
I don't know. I don't know anything. I don't know where I am. I don't know geography. I don't know history.
Well, okay. This is actually good because you're about to learn some geography and history.
I might be hearing things that are attempting to teach me things, but I cannot learn. Okay. That's my biggest problem as a human. If I could learn, I feel like I'd be a lot smarter.
What's your problem with learning? Does it just not stick in your brain? Or do you have to learn in a very specific way to allow yourself to retain the information?
I have to learn in a very specific way that's bordering on impossible. And it would be so specific to me, the way I learn, that it would just ruin the school system. Because you'd just be restructuring it just for one person to learn.
But Shane, do you know that that's what we do now? In the school system, that's what...
Well, I'm glad that it started now.
That's what I'm saying. If you had gone, and I've said this before, like if you had gone to school now, I think you would have done so well because you are so smart and they have to restructure. They give kids individual education plans where they restructure the entire course just for that student.
Could have ruined my life though. It would have thrown me out of orbit.
What, because you would have been, your grades would have been too high?
Well, I would probably have a more conventional job and just be a mediocre employee.
That's true.
Instead of a rock star.
Okay. Shane, first of all, let's tell everyone where we're going, where this rock star is going with his family. So we're going away in 2 weeks.
St. Martin, which is, I said it as nerdy as possible to combat people who every time I say St. Martin, they go, oh, you're going to St. Martin.
St. Martin. There's so many ways to say it.
No one says it that way.
Well, the Dutch do, Shane. It's Sint Maarten in the Dutch.
That's their accent. I'm talking about like when someone goes out of their way to say croissant.
Sint Maarten.
Sint Maarten. People think they're saying it right when they say Sint Maarten.
The people there say Sint Maarten, even with a Caribbean accent or like whatever. Yeah. So it is kind of funny, but basically everybody's like, you can say it however you want and nobody cares because there are so many ways that people say it with their different accents. Nobody from there cares if you say St. Martin.
I've talked to people who live there. They say, this is the correct way to say it. People on this side sometimes say it that way. However, it's like you wouldn't walk into Tim Hortons and say, could I have a croissant?
Some people do, I think.
But that would be very weird because you're putting on an accent for one word. Mm-hmm. You know.
I know.
Like a French person wouldn't be like, hello, I'm going to a hockey game. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I'm going to a hockey game.
Yeah.
Somewhere French Canadian. Okay. Anyway, we're going to St. Martin. We have been twice before, and both times we've stayed on the French side. We love it there. It's not because we prefer whatever, but we just found the best spot to stay. So when we went for the first time, Shane and I went for our honeymoon, and it was my first time going to the Caribbean when we went on our honeymoon. I don't think I had been. And, it was fabulous. It was just the best time ever. We stayed in an Airbnb, French side near Orient Beach, which is super famous for beach clubs. And it's a nude beach that was established there for like decades. Since then, we found a place that was absolutely ideal for the family. And especially because we like to bring babysitting grandparents, which is the easiest travel hack in the book. But it's called Grand Case Beach Club, Grand Cas Beach Club. That is one thing that we do get wrong. The city that we stay by is called Grand Cas, but it's spelled like case, and they do correct you on that one. But it is a fabulous place. It is so beautiful. We rent basically a townhouse. So my mom and the grandparent with us gets their own like little apartment. We get our own bedroom. There's a kitchen, a dining table, balconies. It's gorgeous. But yeah, we're going there in a couple weeks. We are so excited. And Shane, I'm going to give you some facts about St. Martin.
Okay. Well, how excited can I be about this?
Well, you're going to learn.
Okay.
Okay, did you know that it has the most beaches per square mile of anywhere else in the world?
I didn't know that.
See, that surprised me because there's so many other Caribbean islands.
It's very cool.
I know. I know it has the most beautiful beaches. There's also the most restaurants per square mile.
Hmm. I wonder how many of them are good.
I know. Well, because do you remember on our honeymoon, we went to Grand Coast, like we went to the part in the, because the French side has the best food. And we're like, this restaurant looks fabulous. It looks so beautiful. And we got there and it was so beautiful. Like it had the most beautiful location, but the food was so expensive and not anything to write home about.
Where was this?
In St. Martin when we went on our honeymoon.
Yeah. It's hard to find a good restaurant.
Well, there's
You think
so
if
many.
There was more, though, the competition would be higher and they'd all have to be good. But maybe it's like an unspoken thing where it's still the same amount of good restaurants you find anywhere else.
See, we need to look it up. We need to like seriously research our restauranting this time so that we know that where we're going to spend our money is going to be a great spot. You know what I mean?
Because, yeah, you tend to pretend you enjoy every meal, no matter where we go at any restaurant. And then it takes you a day afterwards to admit that you didn't like it. It's an odd habit that I'm wondering where that was developed.
Well, because I want to enjoy the experience still, I think, while I'm at a place, even if I don't love the food. I want to be like, all right, I can enjoy this part of the food or I can enjoy the atmosphere or whatever. And I just try to enjoy it as much as I can.
Just That's so unsettling for me. It makes me feel like I'm not alive. I'm like, oh, no, I don't sense things correctly.
Yeah, but you're not like a negative person. Like you don't go somewhere and like complain when you don't like something. You know what I mean?
No, I with fun, I'll say this meal sucks. Let's get another Corona. This is shit, eh? Worst meal ever. And then we have fun.
Yeah.
Like it's like, I don't know the chef. I'm not talking to them. If they came out, I'd be like, delicious. I've never sent food back when a waiter or waitress comes over. I always, how is it, everybody? Loving it. I rub my tummy and say, yummy, yummy. You know, I do everything.
I know. See, I got to be more honest with myself, but I am. I'm really just trying to enjoy the experience while I'm there. And then
it doesn't
after reflection, I could be like, yeah, that was kind of terrible.
But don't get caught up in the lie to yourself. You can still have an enjoyable experience and eat terrible food.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's a place that I've ever admitted that I didn't like the food right off the bat or where I was like, ooh, this is bad.
Yeah. I find your mom does that too. She has a similar quality where she'll act like she likes it, but then she just won't eat 80% of her food.
No, she'll eat it. She does this. So here's the thing, because both of our, like my mom and Roseanne both do something similar. So my mom does the same thing as me, where she'll kind of eat it and then she'll say something like a week later. She'd be like, ooh, that wasn't for me. Or like she'll refuse to go there again. Mm-hmm. But then Roseanne just doesn't eat it. Roseanne's the one who doesn't eat.
No, but your mom won't eat it. Like your mom will feign interest in the food and then not eat it, which it must be like an upbringing thing of like, politeness.
It's got to be something, yeah.
But
because all three of us do it. We all have something similar that we do. Because
I think I just like if I hated something with when my mom would make food, I would just tell her this is terrible. Oh, I hate this. Like there was no politeness. Yeah. But, because I'm like the honesty is the love, and that's what we have. Like I feel like. Just brutal honesty was.
But see, I'd tell my mom the day after or something.
Yeah.
Like if she made something that I didn't like, I'd have some to be polite because the effort was put in. And then the next day I might say, oh, maybe let's not make that again.
Yeah.
And then that would be that, you know?
Yeah. Everyone's different and it's interesting. Just the little things you notice.
Okay. Are you ready for your next fact?
Yeah, I'm totally ready.
There are more nationalities per capita in St. Martin than anywhere else.
That's very cool.
I'm getting this all from the St. Martin travel website, so I'm assuming it's all correct, but who knows? But
so that must mean it's the racism there is very low.
I've never seen anything like that there. Have you? Like,
no, but I don't see when I'm on vacation. I'm in special areas that are
no, but like even when we went to Detroit. You know, we were talking, like, obviously, we're from Canada. Like, we're very I don't know. It's different. So like when we went to Detroit, we were eating at this one place and we asked, or no, it was a brewery. We're at the brewery and we asked the bartender about like this one restaurant that we heard good things about. And he's like, yeah, it's great, but it's more for people, you know, like me. He's like, it's great, but they might look at you funny when you go in. And he was a black guy. And we were just like, oh, like it's a, that's a funny thing to even bring up. And we went and we got food and it was
good. Which place was this?
It was that place where like we didn't eat in there, like we got it to go, but it
What was the food?
Chicken.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah,
it was?
It was great. It was super good. We went and we had a drink while we waited for it and then we brought it back to our hotel.
Wow, that memory is totally lost on me.
I think it was, we had something to do that night. Like it may have been before the jazz show that we went to.
The what show?
The jazz show. So we wanted to like grab food while and like eat it while we got ready.
That was a good trip though.
It was an amazing trip.
But racism aside, Detroit, fun place.
But it's like clearly, you know, maybe they're assuming that people like us wouldn't have wanted to go there or something like that. I don't know. But in St. Martin, I've never seen that. Like everybody is just always together. It's like my the woman that I've been booking with at our hotel is Polish, like the most Polish name in the world. And then at the resort itself, it's a mix of French people, Caribbean people, and then just expats from like everywhere else that work there. So it's very cool.
No, so that's I a cool little factoid there.
Mm-hmm. All right, I got two more because I had five facts.
Yep.
And this one's actually super interesting. And we're talking about history, Shane. You're going to learn some history right now. St. Martin has the oldest official open border in the world. So it has, because you can go from the Dutch side to the French side because it's technically two countries, but there's nobody that's stopping you to check a passport. It's just like a sign that says you are now entering French St. Martin.
It's pretty cool.
And guess when it was founded? Because this surprised me. How old do you think that border is? So like, give me a year.
86.
No.
Okay, tell me.
1648. It was signed during the Treaty of Concordia. So since the year 1648, the French side and the Dutch side of the island have had an open border.
See, to me, that's less shocking. I was like, okay, she's acting like it's kind of shocking. I think recently would be more shocking than in 1648 because my brain can't wrap my head around that much time, so that does nothing for me.
See, it's like United States, Canada, they weren't even countries at this time. Like that is so long ago in history. To me, it's so cool. And at this point, and this is kind of my last point too, at that point, it was a pirate island pretty much. And this, we never have done many of like the pirate tours or stuff like that in St. Martin. But
we haven't done many pirate tours. How many pirate tours have we done?
We haven't done any, but yeah, I would love
zero
to.
I
think the kids would like it too. So they have like a super long history of piracy on the island. And there's actually two rum distilleries. I was looking them up and they're like pirate rum distilleries, but have become super famous. And the one is called Guava Berry and it has become the official, it's become the official rum at Pirates of the Caribbean for Disney in Japan.
Wow.
So there you go. Yeah. So
very
we gotta
cool.
go. We gotta go there.
Yeah, sure. I think the kids, if it's four children, it needs to be like ahoy mateys. It can't be it can't be like real pirate facts. That is kind of no. sterile.
No, I'm sure we could find like a fun pirate thing to do though. I think that'd be fun. But Shane, we've been now two times and honestly I am super excited, but I wanted to ask you, do you have a favorite memory from being there, like a favorite thing that you've done?
Well, I liked being on our honeymoon because, you know, back when we were still in love and you got tricked for that. What's that scam called?
Oh my God.
It's a timeshare. I was going to call it a daylight saving scam, but
yeah,
Alex got tricked into thinking that she won a prize because these very charming men walked up to Alex, handed her like a scratch ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Alex scratched it and she got the three cherries. And then the guys were like, oh my goodness, you've gotten the three cherries, man. And then Alex is like, what? And you screamed so loud and you were like crying. You were so happy. And they're like,
it was the grand prize.
They're like, the three things you could have won. One thing was like an iPod or something mm-hmm. that was cool at the time, a huge television set or a trip back to St. Martin. And then all you have to do is sit through this like 2-hour seminar, which you thought was going to be easy. And then We went, of course, but I warned you. I was like, listen, this is kind of a scam. It's like a timeshare thing.
Okay, wait, before you go on, who wouldn't sit through that to get another free trip back to St. Martin? It sounded too good to be true.
I think anyone who's ever knows about this timeshare scam or anyone who sat through one of these knows it's very tricky. Mm-hmm. And there's all these stipulations and you always win the trip. You never win the two tangible items that are kind of like, it's like a shell game that they always make you win the trip back. You have to, when you do air quote win, mm-hmm. it's for like two or three nights, but you have to book like a 5-night stay and pay for the other two.
And flights are expensive as heck.
And they harass you the whole time you're on your trip. They try to lure you to more, speeches, timeshare speeches. And their strategy in St. Martin is when they realize you're not going to buy the timeshare, but you're still going to claim the prize, they verbally attack you and they try to be as insulting as possible. And this woman, who kind of reminded me of the actress Marianne Cotillard,
oh, yes,
was like, your husband's cheating on you, and was saying all this stuff and saying I wasn't a man, which she wasn't wrong.
She started talking to Shane about, like, because Shane was like, oh, just trying to find excuses to say no, and like just giving her one every 2 seconds, because obviously we didn't want timeshare. And he's like, oh, I gotta talk to her dad first. And she's like, what, you need to talk to her father before you make decision? Are you not a man?
You have one accent. No, it's not. You have one accent that you're able to do, Alex, and it's always this weird Polish Russian accent.
Well,
just retire that.
It's what
voice.
I got. I'm trying to do another voice.
I know. Just do your normal voice because it never works out.
Whatever. I think they got the vibe that she was a sultry, French-sounding, Russian-sounding lady.
Right. But point is, that was my favorite memory.
Yeah. No, it's good. I was actually telling the kids that was a fun moment, but it was kind of weird. It was kind of scary. Just because I was not expecting that level of belittling, and like she was really going for the jugular. It was insane. And then when she finally realized we weren't going to budge, she just walked away. Mm-hmm. Like she just left us. And yeah. Then we got the voucher, but it was only for 3 nights, so
yeah,
wasn't worth it.
And it expired after a year.
Yeah. But I was telling the kids one of my favorite moments. So I loved going down with them and going to Pinal Island. We took a boat, a crazy boat ride where we did almost all die because we took a speedboat over like out into the open ocean with these wild waves. And we had also convinced another family with a young child to come on this boat with us and share the cost. And we didn't know it was going to be so intense. Like it wasn't, you know, a lackadaisical, like, what do you call it? Like a pontoon or one of those cool sailboats where you just sit there and it goes really slow. It was high octane. If James Bond was doing like a chase in a boat on the ocean, this is what it would have been. Like we were getting air, like 10 feet of air on every single wave.
I feel way more comfortable with the James Bond level chase. That was like pirates who just learned how to ride a boat and were being chased and running for their lives. We were going off waves. I think we went off a ramp at one point. It was terrifying. I'm holding on to a baby.
Yeah, we had both little kids.
No life jackets.
The kids had life jackets.
They
on.
Did?
Yeah, the kids
I didn't
did.
Have one.
We didn't have one. The kids no. did.
So that's great. Who's going to save me?
But once we finally made it to our destination, so we did like a bit of a tour, but we went to this place called Pinal Island, and it's just this island, like very shallow across the bay from a very calm bay, which is where we'll take the boat from this time. But it's by Orient Bay, and it's just this island with two restaurants and bars on it. And then they have all these tables in the water. So you grab your beer, you drink it in the water. It's like so nice. It's so fun. It's gorgeous. Anyway, can't wait to do that again. And then I was, my other favorite part, I was telling the kids when you and I were at the nude beach and people found a baby sea turtle and were trying to get it back out mm-hmm. to the ocean or something. I have no idea. But I remember you and I brought it to that like one dock area. Do you remember that?
Yeah, we found a sea turtle, but there was like a threesome going on.
Yes.
We were told that, you know, nude beaches weren't sexual. I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. They're like, it's just natural. It's not what you think. Just be yourself. And, you know, it's not a big to-do. This guy had like pubic jewelry and he started...
It was a foursome.
It was a foursome. Two couples, yeah. They were like on a bench and there's this turtle thing going on and there's also other stuff going on. It was very weird.
So Shane and I were just swimming. And then like one group of naked hook hippies to the right, they were the ones that found the sea turtle and they were like naturalists and kind of normal and not blinking at nudity. And then to the left was the foursome on beach chairs, which was really crazy.
No one was blinking at nudity, though, whether you were in the foursome or saving turtles.
But I think the foursome people were looking at the nudity with a different idea than
they were
the
turned
hippies.
On. And I do think if you go to a nude beach, you're way more likely to be engaged in a threesome.
Probably.
Like, people act like, oh no, it's just the same as normal, like, bathing suit wearing people. It's not. There's a way more sexual element, and
I think there is.
Creepier people checking you out.
Definitely creepier people. But it was super fun, and that whole experience I thought was hilarious. And you and I have a really good picture from that mm-hmm. beach where we gave, like, there's some, like, young women there. So we gave them the camera, and they took a picture of Shane and I standing naked on the nude beach, which we hung in our bathroom for a long time. But we blocked mm-hmm. out. The parts yes. with tape.
Hung being the operative word there.
Anyway, Shane, there's one travel item. I wanted to get your take on it to see if I should buy it. So I see it, like I see other families that travel, they have this. I just can't tell if it's going to be worth it or a nuisance, but it's this thing that you get for the airplane because it's going to be a 5-hour flight, right? So keeping kids occupied, now that our kids are old enough to have the iPad, it's great because 5 hours is just, it's like two movies and, you know, some games, and then it's done, way easier. However, there's this thing you can buy to make sure they're more comfortable. It's like, I don't know how it works. It attaches to their seat, like under their bum, I think, and then you attach it into the chair in front of you so then the kids can put out their legs so that they're like sitting on a couch or they can lay down and go to sleep and it's like a bed. Do you think something like that is worth having?
Or how cumbersome is it to take through the airport?
I think it's pretty compact. I got to look at it. It might even be like a cloth thing that you can fold up. But do you think something like that might be useful?
We got to see if it's a cloth thing or if it's cumbersome as hell. But I don't know. I need to check it out. Sounds it might, cool, though.
Yeah, it might be good even just to get into a review on, see if the kids like it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do that. But yeah, travel items, traveling with kids. We have those awesome things from Mini Jet Setter. Those little bags with like 100 games in them.
Yeah, that's... That Mini Jet Setter thing is awesome because each game, don't get me wrong, they won't fixate on any of the games for more than 2 minutes, but 2 times 100 minutes, because there's 100 games, it just, like, it's enough to get you through a flight.
Oh my God, yeah. That, and then the iPad or whatever movies that the airlines got, it's like a dream with the kids at this age. And sitting in their own seats, yes, it costs a stupid amount more money. But oh my God, it is so much more relaxing for me. Like, I can actually eat a lunch. I can have a glass of wine. I can do whatever. And it's so much nicer. All right, Shane, are you ready to go to the question segment?
Yeah, the mailbag segment. It's where you answer the listener questions and I answer them too.
All right, we have three of the same question, all worded slightly differently, but the same. And that question is essentially, do you think that the quote-unquote world has a quote-unquote right to know Kate Middleton's cancer diagnosis? I have opinions. Will people ever learn to respect the privacy of those in the spotlight, thinking of Kate and the backlash on the surgery and the photo, whatever? I think there's so many ways to look at it, but I do think that Kate Middleton, Princess Catherine, is in a different stratosphere than other celebrities that are merely in the spotlight. And I think it is so natural for people to be curious and worried. Like, their whole existence is paid for by the British public, right? They pay to house them, to give them all the beautiful things they have, everything. And Princess Catherine is a super beloved figure. And after Diana, I think that people really like gravitate and want to protect. And the royal family is pretty sketchy and they've been known to be pretty sketchy and like, what's going on with Prince Andrew? Like, there's obviously, there's so many things that are weird and kind of scary. So then when an outsider like Kate comes in, I think people see that as like a Diana kind of figure, like an outsider coming in. It's like they're not going to protect her as much as the rest of the family. And then the palace is putting out doctored photos and things saying that she's fine, but the photos are fake. The palace admits that they're fake. It was, like, I got sucked into it, and it was weird and kind of scary.
But what are you talking everything. About right now? What are you saying
here? Well, I'm kind of justifying, I guess, why people got so obsessed with it and got so obsessed with where she was and why she was missing and what happened. So I don't think that somebody like Kate, I think it's natural for people to be curious about it. And I think that the palace could have handled it so differently. I think that they could have even said, hey, Catherine is going through a more serious thing or whatever. I don't know what they could have said. I'm not a PR person, but I do think it could have been handled differently. And that could have quelled people's questions about it because everything they were doing was just making it worse.
Yeah, to me, I look at it the way that it's like the food scenario. Mm-hmm. It's a lot better if you just say, I have cancer.
Yeah.
And then everyone wants to be like, who, what could that mean? It's like, no, I have cancer. Mm-hmm. It's like, who, what if you don't? No, I do. And then it just shuts everybody the fuck up. But right now they, you know, doctoring the photo from like 6 years ago, you have to be smarter than that if mm-hmm. you're the royal family and know that there's so many sleuths out there. Even 0.1% of people, there's so much interest. That's still 100,000 people who are very sleuth-like investigating this and taking the time to make little videos where they're uncovering all these secrets. You have to know that. So it's not embarrassing to have cancer. Just say it and get it done with. Do we have a right? No. But this is just how it is. Like at my work, if I just didn't show up for a month and mm-hmm. I told my superior, there'd be a whisper network still 100%. Chatting. And the more notoriety I had, the bigger the whisper network is. And then when you're famous, it stops being a whisper network and it becomes very public. And that's it how it is. And nothing's embarrassing if you just come out and say it. And that's why when I don't like a meal, I go, this meal sucks. And then we all have a laugh and we're still having fun.
There you go.
And you know, you can have cancer and still have dignity and respect and not be embarrassed. And you could anything that happened. I remember, you know, Letterman was trying to blackmail Letterman years ago. And he's just like, yeah, I'm doing this thing. And then everyone kind of respected Letterman mm-hmm. for being honest, even though he was the thing that he came out and said he did wasn't very respectable at all.
Oh, I got to look into that. I don't know the situation.
You don't remember? Oh, no. So Letterman was essentially cheating on his wife.
Oh, shit.
So this person tried to blackmail Letterman. It's like, you have to give me X amount of dollars or I'm going to ruin your life and sell this. So Letterman goes, hey, listen, I found this note in my car. Someone trying to blackmail me. Yes, I am doing this. I'm a total asshole for doing this kind of, I'm paraphrasing. But essentially, he just fessed up. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is when you just are honest, it's the easiest way to quell the noise.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what, like, personally, like with things that we've gone through, like miscarriage and things like that, we've been open about it. But personally, I prefer that because then it's like you say it once and it's done with, instead of, you know, people coming up and saying, oh, how's the pregnancy going? And then you have to live that over, you know, 100 times at the moment of telling somebody and then somebody being like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's like you say it once. People can say something if they mm-hmm. want to, and then it's done with. And then you can go forward.
We also painted ourselves into a corner because, like, you know, day one of you being pregnant, it's like, we're pregnant. And, you know, we're like,
conception just happened last night. Yes,
making, like, you know, banners and stuff. And like, what should we name our baby holes and stuff?
But,
so,
you know, but I like that too, because then it's like, I'm excited about pregnancy. I want to celebrate that with people. I want to share that with people. So I do personally like being open about that kind of thing. And yeah, I don't know. It's different. I do think the royal family is different because their entire lives are kind of lived for the public, which is wrong and weird, but that's the institution of it. And that's why they get money from the public, because it's like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, weird, complicated, but I feel, yeah, our heart goes out to Kate, obviously. And like with everything that's transpired, but I do think it was handled horribly by those around her. Anyway, the next question. Is it true that in Canada they have streets called this street, that street? And yes, it is true. There's a place in Canada where the streets are named things like this street, that street, and other street. So it's like go down this street, then turn right on that street, and then you'll take a left on the other street.
I've never heard of this before. I don't think this is uniquely Canadian. I think every country in the world has weird street names. So I think it's like, did you know in Texas you can't carry a skunk down the street? It's like that type of weird factoid.
It is. And I had to look it up because I didn't know. But Shane, because this part didn't surprise me at all. Where in Canada, and we have been to this place, do you think that this would happen? Like, where do you think would have
Moose Jaw? None of it. Places like that, you know.
It was Nova Scotia, where everybody's just kind of like jovial and funny and
yeah,
nice. Okay. And I was like, oh, that makes sense for somewhere in Nova Scotia to have like goofy names, because I think they did it intentionally to be humorous, obviously.
Yeah,
So it's in a place called Porter's Lake, Nova Scotia.
I would
so
think it's just, there, it's just a place with minimal streets, so it doesn't get that confusing.
Oh, for sure. All right, the next question. Nut allergies at school. Do you think the whole school should be nut-free or just classes with students that have the allergy? Our five-year-old is at a school that's entirely nut-free. So honestly, not okay. I believe that most elementary schools here, if not all of them, are nut-free. Mm-hmm. Like I honestly think every elementary school in Hamilton is nut-free because it is such a common allergen. So that's the thing. It's like there might be a kid in every single class with a nut allergy because it's wild. So many kids are allergic to peanuts or whatever. So that's why like it's easy though, I find.
Has the nut allergy grown from when we were children? Because I was eating peanut butter at my schools.
In elementary school, though?
Of course.
See, because when I was in elementary school, it was nut-free. But in high school, they sold peanut butter in the cafeteria. But in elementary school, everything was nut-free.
Oh, yeah. I was nuts for nuts. I'm just joking.
But I think it has become more prevalent.
Yeah.
It must have. And like I remember there would be students with airborne nut allergies and everything. So it's pretty serious. And like you don't want your little kid to be walking into that environment, like that would just be so stressful every day. But then in high school, it's weird because then they just take away all the precautions and you can eat whatever you want to.
Well, I think maybe in high school, they're old enough to know what to do if shit mm-hmm. hits the fan.
Yes, I agree. And there's enough, those schools are typically bigger, so there's enough places to go should they need to seek safety from peanuts. But
I don't like that nut butter substitute though.
No, but the kids like it.
I don't think they do. I think that's a myth.
I don't know.
Lucy told me I straight up hate that.
She told me she likes it with apples, dipping it in apples.
Okay.
Or dipping apples in it.
She said, never give that to me again. And she pointed at that. Yeah. Okay. Maybe she likes it with you.
But yeah, no, it's tough. But like there's a school in Hamilton where you can't have, as a teacher, you can't put milk in your coffee because of, there's one student and it was brought to court, like human rights court, and it was decided that the entire school is not allowed to have milk in their coffee or any egg or milk products. And that's tough. Like that's, I could see why people be up in arms about that. But I believe that once those students go to high school, then again, it's just those classrooms that they're in and not the whole school. So the environments do change, but I get the no nut thing. And honestly, it's so easy because all the snack companies, they'll have a big no peanut sign or no nut sign on them. So it's easy to make snacks. Last question we're going to do today. I've got a 5-year-old, almost 6-year-old, who's asking a lot of questions about where babies come from and how the baby got in my tummy. How do I handle this? Shane, I'll let you take it off and then I'll finish since I know you got a meeting today.
Wait, no, it's fine. My meeting got moved.
Oh, okay.
So perfect. It's fine. So this is where do babies come from?
Where do babies, how are babies made?
I honestly don't know. Like I know what you have to do to make them, but how it actually works is weird. Like even knowing that the little sperm guy hits the egg, then what happens? Like,
well, then it goes inside. The sperm goes inside the egg, yeah. And then it fertilizes the egg.
How does
and then,
it? What does that mean? What is that? How does it fertilize it?
Well, the egg then attaches itself to the side of the uterus, and then the cells start dividing. Like the sperm provides the egg with whatever it needs to make the cells divide.
Why does that make it divide though?
I don't know.
That's what I mean. It's like,
well, see, these are great questions though. And I think not knowing like the scientific parts about this, because I think the way I'd approach it, and I think it's so important too, is approach it from like just a matter of fact kind of scientific angle and be mm-hmm. like, well, let's look at it. Let's look at how it works. Because there's fantastic images online of like eggs and sperm and it shows the process and it's very cool and it looks very mm-hmm. scientific. And then watching how that happens and how those two little things, duplicate and duplicate and duplicate and change and eventually turn into what comes out as a human baby.
Yeah. When I was young, like probably 6, maybe 5, I was at a babysitter's house and they threw in like a video about sex. It wasn't a porno or anything. It was like just a cartoon about how babies are made.
That's psychotic.
Yeah, it was a little weird. But I'm sure there's more appropriate YouTube videos that explain it. It was made for kids. It's not
But it's still so crazy for a babysitter to do that. If somebody not your parents or your teacher, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
I was laughing my head off, I remember. And then after that, I watched Uncle Buck and loved that too.
That's funny. Well, that's a weird change up. I like that.
Yeah, it was a weird double feature. Wasn't the most normal thing in the world, especially, not asking the parents. Who knows? Maybe my parents were in on it, so.
They could have been. They could have been like, all right, let's put our kids in the same room and show them a video on the birds and the bees. Mm-hmm. But I do think it is important as a parent, like if your kids are asking those questions, to approach it and not kind of put it off because you're nervous or you're embarrassed about it. Because if they're going to learn from somewhere else, then the chances of them getting inaccurate, misleading, or confusing information are going to go through the roof, and they're going to have weird information, or it's going to come from a place that makes them feel embarrassed or unsafe or something. So it is so much better to have that conversation when they're asking about it, but just approach it matter-of-factly. Well, you need a daddy that has sperm, a mommy has an egg, and then the sperm goes into the egg, fertilizes it, look up the videos.
So in this world you're creating, the kids don't go, what sperm?
No,
so you, a daddy's got sperm.
Even when you answer that, it's a cell. And you talk about that. It's a cell from a daddy and a cell from a mommy. And then
what's a cell?
Well, then that's
See?
Like
it
a
gets
whole,
really hard. How
they're the things
sperm
that make up
made?
Your body. You have skin cells, you have eye cells. They're all over your body. And they're the things, the building blocks of a person. They come together. And when you have millions and millions of cells, they create a whole person.
So I just want Betty. I'm just picturing Betty listening to this and going, oh, of course. Yes, but of course.
Well, I Betty isn't the same as Lucy. Like, she's not the same level as Lucy was with her age at speech and learning and things like that. But I think if Lucy was going to come to us, we'd explain it in a different way than Betty was. And there's so much nuance in how you're going to explain it to different kids and like depending on their levels and what they're capable of understanding.
Oh yeah, Betty would never even broach the subject.
No, but Lucy's asked it. But Lucy's always known too that babies don't come from your tummy. They grow inside your uterus and then come out of your vagina. Like, say that. If your kid is asking where it comes out of, if they're saying tummy, feel free to correct them, tummy. Say, no, it's a uterus and it comes out of your vagina. Like,
why is that even important, though?
Because so that they don't get misinformation from somewhere else, just so that they know. So it's never stigmatized. It's never something to be like weird about or embarrassed about. It's just how it is.
I just feel now, too, kids can just, once they're at the age they can Google, every question you just Google.
Yeah, but then you're going to have run into weird and maybe scary things online if you're
Googling
going
to,
about
no matter what,
babies.
You're going to no matter what.
I think it can prepare them though. If it's like, oh, a baby comes out of vagina, then instead of Googling where do babies come from and seeing vaginas, then they're going to be like, oh, well, I know what I'm going to see if I Google it. And then it's not going to be as jarring.
All right.
You know what I mean?
Nah, I don't know.
There's a book on Amazon. It's like a huge seller. It's called It's Not the Stork. And it's a book about all these things. Because, I mean, remember when we had Perez Hilton on this podcast and he talked about like when his kids were asking how they were born, he straight up told them that it was, you know, like he obviously is a single gay dad. So mm-hmm. he talked about how they took his sperm and a woman's egg and put them together and used in vitro, whatever. Like,
yeah.
There's so many processes. So it does come down to the sperm and egg. I don't know. I think there's a lot of scientific ways you can get there. But It's Not the Stork is by an author called Roby H. Harris. So you can check that out. That might answer questions for you. And since you're not going away right now, one last question.
Okay.
What did you do with Lucy while you were giving birth to Betty? We're starting to talk about a second. We gave her to my parents.
Yes.
And she stayed there for the entirety of the time we were at the hospital. I think we gave her to my parents the day that the induction started, like when they gave me a Foley balloon. And then we went home and had a relaxing night. I was watching Fleabag all day while I was in bed mm-hmm. with the balloon. And then we went to the hospital the next morning.
Yeah, I don't know what we would have done had we not had that. Like, I don't know. That's tricky. Luckily, yeah. We didn't have to think about that, but Google that.
Yeah.
What to do if you don't have parents or grandparents that can support it. And then I remember when we got home, we set up a camera and filmed Lucy meeting Betty for the first time, which is fascinating.
Well, it was cool because so we had Betty in a bassinet beside the couch and she was sleeping. So you couldn't even see there was a baby in there. But Lucy came in. She knew I had a baby. She knew that Betty was in my tummy, everything. And then in my uterus. And we showed her the video of Betty coming out and me holding her so she could see exactly that Betty came out of my tummy. She was a real thing now. She was on my chest. She saw Betty's little newborn face. And then right after the video, we're like, Lucy, like, do you want to see your sister? Like, she's here. And then we pointed to the bassinet and then Lucy got up and peeked in the bassinet. And then newborn baby Betty had a gift for Lucy, like a little stuffy, yeah. Which Lucy thought was cute. But it was... like a super sweet moment. I think it was really, it must have been confusing for Lucy, because right after it, she was like, okay, over it, and then went and did her own thing.
No, but then after, Lucy was going crazy and like hated Betty. Mm-hmm. And then you got so upset and you were just like, I can't handle this. And you started freaking out.
Well, it's sad, right? You just want everything to be so copacetic.
No, just like you weren't upset because Lucy was upset. You were overwhelmed with the fact that we now had two children in the house.
Was that when I was crying in the kitchen?
No,
on the
floor? Were on the couch. You might have moved to the floor. And then, yeah. I remember I was looking up divorce attorneys, everything. Not for me. It was for a friend, but I was just curious. But yeah, that was an interesting time period. But now we're happy we have both of them.
Of course.
Yeah. I was always happy, for the record. Why are you squinting your eyes and shaking your head?
I feel like you're trying to throw me under some bus. I was so full of hormones. My body had just been ripped apart.
I'm not throwing you under the bus. I'm just trying to be authentic. You need to be less like the royal family and just be a little more
I am open. So open.
Well, you're squint-eyeing like, oh, we're going to edit that out.
No, I'm not.
You hated the kids after you had them.
Oh, shut up. That's not true.
I'm joking. Alex, have some humor
here. I've got humor.
This is a bit of a comedy podcast, as I hope people have realized from time to time.
But Shane, that is all we've got for today,
baby. We have it all. And if you notice the weird edit at the end.
It's not. No, we're leaving it in.
Okay. Thank you so much for listening to
This Family Tree Podcast, episode 201.